Cousins' pocket collapses, ball flutters in the air, intercepted. Intercepted by Chamari Connor, who hands it off now on the near side to Jalen Watson. Chamari Connor, his second takeaway in as many weeks, as there was a hit on Cousins and the ball flew up in the air. And Kansas City, with 32 seconds, has the ball now at the Atlanta 34 and a chance to score.
The field is an interception. The Kansas City ball, first down.
Mitch Holthus on the call right here on 96.5 The Fan. You're home for the Chiefs. It's a victory Monday. Hope everybody's had a good start to their day. I know it's already a better start than what it could have been based off of what the result maybe was looking like. It could have been very late in that football game. It just changes the whole mood on a Monday. And normally you might be saying, if it was after a loss and then it's cloudy and it's cold, you're like, oh, this sucks.
And if you were a Kansas fan or a Wildcat fan and a Royals fan, you got really kicked in the nuts there for a while this weekend.
But fortunately, the champs did handle their business. And instead, I'm loving the fall weather today. I'm loving that it's a little cloudy and it's 58 degrees. Hoodie season, it's great. It's honestly a great Monday morning in Kansas City. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Reminder, at noon today, the only place you can hear from Andy Reid is your home for the Chiefs, exclusively on 96.5 The Fan. He had a kind of a short press conference last night, so I imagine we'll hear a little bit more of his thoughts on the game. I'm sure they got back pretty late last night with it being Sunday night football. But I hate to be a broken record with the first 3 weeks now of the season, but this team is still not playing all that great of football. And yet, here they are. They're 3-0. Other teams are struggling as well, and they're sitting at 1-2, or they're 2-1, and yet the Chiefs have played a road game. They've gone up against Burrow and Cousins and Lamar. They're 3-0, and they do simply just find ways to win. When we all know, like, Patrick Mahomes, the team is not playing all that great, not executing, certainly not anywhere near the level that they would like to be at. And yet, this team continues to be a pain in the ass for everybody else in the league. And as we said a week or so ago, like, they are inevitable, and that was another example last night. They have won 9 games in a row, and during those 9, 8 of them were one-score games, tightly contested games.
Well, it's 54 points. This is, like, the funniest stat ever, because I don't know how many 9-0 teams are. I didn't go look it up. 54 points for their 9-0 record in the last 9 games is the lowest margin of victory for 9 games in NFL history. Typically, if you win 9 games in a row, you win them by more, right? So, yeah, it's close, but also look at the opponents. I would expect 2 games against the Ravens, 2 games against Cincinnati, a game in the playoffs against Miami, a game in the playoffs against the 49ers, a game in the playoffs against the Bills. 3 teams who we thought were all going to be in the playoffs this year in Atlanta, Cincinnati, and Baltimore. I would expect those to be one possession games. So winning by a small amount, whatever. What do you think? I'm like, hurt by that? It's fine. They are just better at winning these games that are ugly more than others. And I'll be honest, some of it is you know that meme where the guy's like riding his bike and then he sticks his own stick through the spokes and he's like, what happened? I fell over on my bike. That's why some of these games are close at the end. Like yesterday, it's a 2-score game with like 8 minutes to play. If Harrison Butker just makes a damn extra point, and then you and I, Gold, sit back on the couch, crack open a beer, and we're like, victory, problem solved, everybody. But he missed the extra point, and then things got a little interesting.
As they usually do.
Because they usually do. The Chiefs just end up winning those games is the difference.
This is why they're must-watch, though. You wonder why they get so many primetime games and all this. Like, tell me when you're not entertained. When you're not, like, I'm not saying it's not stressful. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's stressful. There's
times where it's stressful, and I'm sure a lot of you listening are like, hey, I would have been fine if this was 28-0 at halftime, you know? I guess 28-3 it was in Atlanta. But basically, when you think about how this team has played, if you were to put a letter grade on where they're at, like, last night was probably like a C type of performance. And most teams, when you have a C performance against what I think is a Falcons team that has a great chance still to win that division, when they think get things really wrong with Kirk Cousins, I don't think he's at 100% yet. You saw some flashes of why people are excited about the Falcons. I think defensively, right, they did some really good things overall. But a lot of teams can't win when they're not playing their A game. And the great teams find ways to win when they're not playing all that well. And that's where this football team, I'll say offensively, because I actually think defensively, we're going to talk more about Nick Bolton here in a little bit. Defensively, this team is playing great. They really are. It doesn't mean that there's not a
playing some really good
miscommunication
football.
First drive of the game, clearly some miscommunication there where Drew Tranquil and Nazi Johnson, they both went towards the line
and
of scrimmage.
And you can see Nazi. They did good job on the broadcast.
Yeah.
Clearly trying to be like, let's switch.
Yeah. It wasn't that Drew Tranquil was on Bijan Robinson out wide. That wasn't necessarily the problem. The problem was that nobody went with Drake London. And they both went with Robinson.
Yeah.
So there's just like those mistakes have happened. You get that kind of stuff cleaned up. But it was another example when this team also gets got for a first drive or so, there's no reason to panic, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Nobody adjusts better, as we've said 100 times by now over the last couple seasons, than Steve Spagnuolo and this defense. You got a great game plan, whatever you got to lay out there, you script it up like Andy does. But on the flip side, the Falcons did that. And you got them a little bit. You know, the wide receiver screen to Mooney worked a little bit early on in that game. As the game went on, the Chiefs were ready for it. They didn't have a counter to that. The Falcons didn't. And Nick Bolton's final play of the game, I think, was an example of that on the run. That was something that he was ready for, that they knew was coming. And before Robinson's even cutting to the left on the far side of the field, Nick Bolton's already running to the spot. So
yep,
all that is well-coached team. Like, there doesn't mean there's not frustration. I still didn't like some of the decision-making at times. But they're a well-coached team. That's how you win. You just mentioned the stat, 9 straight wins by a combined 54. It's the lowest ever in a 9-game stretch. That only happens because you got great coaching, too.
Correct. Or a quarterback who, when it's down and out and the times are the toughest, will always get it. The Chiefs simultaneously have never scored in 5 years, I think, when they have possession of the ball, already up one score, and could make it a 2-score game and end it. They've never scored. I'm convinced. I've never seen a drive in which the Chiefs take possession of the ball, up one score in the fourth quarter, and then they go score and end the game. Simultaneously, though, if the Chiefs take possession of the ball either down or tied with a chance to win it, I think they're hitting it like a 90% clip. So in the toughest moments, that is when they are their best. They had 3 penalties go against them in the final drive. The horse collar call was the correct call. He definitely horse collar tackled him. The McDuffie one was garbage, and the hands to the face one was garbage. But so what? When it was 4th and 1 and they had to make a play, what happened? Leo Chanel took on 2 blockers. Nick Bolton ran free through a gap and hit Bijan for his 3rd tackle for loss of the game. So yeah, and we'll talk more about Bolton in a minute, but it's hard for me to feel like right now, if you made me give a letter grade for how well I think the Chiefs are playing as a team 3 games into the season, B minus. Like, I feel like they're playing their B minus football. Maybe eventually this just becomes their standard brand. Like last year, right? We thought they were playing like B minus football for a while, C plus football for a while. And it turned out that was just pretty much their A game. I don't feel that way about this Chiefs team right now. There is unlock or hidden potential inside that offense where yesterday they both looked out of sorts, but also moved the ball. They had drives of 11 and 11 plays. And yeah, I'd like Mahomes to stop throwing bad picks. That's a bad pick.
We're going to talk about him a little bit later on. He acknowledged that he, you know, is not right at this point in time. You know, he blamed some of just basic fundamentals are off right now. And the beautiful thing, and the reason why, like, you know, there's not panic or anything, is all right, your quarterback admits that he's off right now. You've got some questions still, obviously, at left tackle. We'll talk about Wandia maybe tomorrow on the show a little bit more. And yet you're 3-0, and you look at how other teams have performed in the NFL to this point in time. Other teams that have had that really bad game and they can't get over the hump, you know, and the Chiefs have been able to do that. And so that's the beautiful thing on a Victory Monday in Kansas City. You mentioned a couple of the penalties that on that final drive against the Chiefs defense. I think a couple of those were makeup calls because, look, it was not a well-placed ball from Kirk Cousins in the end zone, but should have been pass interference, okay?
Yeah, it was pass interference.
Kyle Pitts got held, but also Kirk Cousins didn't really give him much of a chance to throw it. I think that's why they didn't throw the flag. That, of course, once again, prompted the barrage of fans of every other team saying the Chiefs, it's rigged, et cetera, et cetera.
NFL calls games for them. It's fixed.
Embrace the hate. But I'll admit, it's tough to not also acknowledge those that, for whatever reason, just go to the low-hanging fruit. And it's lazy. There's stats and numbers out there to debunk what everybody thinks is happening in the league. So embrace the hate. But I also, I can't help myself. I can't just sit by on the side blindly and let people claim that the Chiefs get more calls than everybody else when we have the numbers that show that Patrick Mahomes does not get a bunch of roughing the passer penalties. In fact, he gets some of the fewest roughing the passer penalties in the league. So you just go through. What happens is the Chiefs are on primetime. Everybody in the world is watching. They also, when there is a mistake by an official, because the mistakes happen, and I think that should have been a PI, the Chiefs capitalize on it, as in they get a stop on the next play. Because if the Falcons score the very next play, nobody cares about the maybe blown PI call. But the Chiefs don't let you get a second or third chance to make up for that, and you have to capitalize, and they didn't. The Chiefs do, and so that's why it gets pinpointed or picked out more. Plus, when you are the defending champs, in this case, back-to-back champs, you're going to have every fan base waiting and hoping for you to fail. And when you don't, they're upset. It's admittedly what we did with the Patriots at the time. So this is nothing new. It seemed like the Patriots got every single call. It seems like the Chiefs, I'm sure to other fan bases, get every single call, but that's not what is happening. They just stand out more because of the primetime games and that they actually win.
Can I state one thing that I don't like about the other side of this really holding against it? One, there were two roughing the passer penalties yesterday. One had no bearing, zero, on the result of the play. The Chiefs scored a touchdown, and then he got 15 yards closer on an extra point. Okay, who cares? And then the other one sustained a drive that eventually led to a touchdown for the Falcons. They had decidedly different outcomes. But the thing I don't understand is, let's just say they called a pass interference, and it's first and goal from the one. First, they're not guaranteed a touchdown there. I would say a touchdown 90% of the time, but they're not guaranteed a touchdown right there, especially because they're down two starting offensive linemen, and the run game was non-existent. So I'll give them an 80% chance they score a touchdown in one of the three plays there, and they don't just kick a field goal, and they're still down. Okay, 80% chance. Then I got to couple that with the only 50% chance they have of getting the two-point conversion and actually going up three. So maybe total.
Plus, the Chiefs get the ball still. Yeah. It's not like the game is over.
Exactly. Maybe like total. A 40%, 35% chance, statistically 30% chance that they're up by, the best case scenario, they score a touchdown and they are up by three. 30% chance. In that scenario, the Chiefs still have 4 minutes and three timeouts to go get a score. 3 points, mind you, by the way, with Harrison Butker as their kicker. I'm sorry. What is that? An 80% chance? I mean, pretend like somehow what was left in the game had no bearing. And that even though they didn't get the call there, the Falcons still possessed the ball with enough time to score a touchdown to get a win. And what couldn't they do? That. They were still given second life after losing out on that penalty to go win that football game, and they couldn't do it. So, like, I don't feel bad when we wake up and the Chiefs always manage to get it done in that situation statistically versus we're just ignoring that there was 4 minutes left to go and three timeouts.
Yeah, anytime the Chiefs are going to be the standalone game, every game in the NFL we've seen with officiating over the last probably 20 years, every game is going to have a call that was incorrect. That's the sad reality of officiating when you have the human element of the game. Missed calls are going to happen on both sides, but only one team is getting acknowledged for it because they're the team that's winning. And that's how it works in sports a lot of times. And so this is not ending anytime soon. This will not be the last time that we see. Yeah, this is not the last time that we see people try to claim that the Chiefs are getting every single call. And I went back and forth with somebody yesterday that is in the media, but not a Chiefs fan, and just kind of, they claim unbiased, but we'll see. And you know, they're like, how come you guys don't just embrace? I'm like, I think everybody we've said embrace the hate that exists in the NFL towards this city now, frankly, and this football team. But at the same time, like, I'm not just going to let you make up stuff, you know, and that's kind of where I'm at on this whole thing. Like, we can, embrace the hate. People don't want
to
see you win.
But I'm not
going
to let you feed false statistics to me and then just pretend like they're real.
Really smart people that use numbers on a daily basis for their own content, that are really good at what they do, and yet they still push this out when they know deep down there are numbers that debunk every single thing they put out. The roughing the passer is one that always pisses me off because everybody acts like Mahomes gets more roughing the passer. There are clear numbers. Anybody can pull them up. It takes like 30 seconds to do that. You look at over the last 5 years, roughing the passer penalties, and Mahomes is towards the bottom, as in they don't actually get called for them.
It's also just like bringing it up yesterday is so disingenuous. He scored a touchdown on the play. It had no bearing on the result. Meanwhile, there was a player you and I spoke about the first couple of weeks, and I thought fairly, based on how slow of a start I felt like and we felt like they were having to the season, Nick Bolton. Somebody had said yesterday, like, well, you better talk. Like, why wouldn't I? I'm not offended to say something good about someone just because I've been critical of their play before. Nick Bolton was one of the three best defensive players on the field yesterday. Not only did he save the game on the fourth down stop, obviously, in which the game was over because Nick Bolton made the tackle. He had three tackles for loss. You didn't see him in pass coverage. It wasn't like he was getting picked on by the tight ends. They had the one big play to Kyle Pitts, and outside of that, weren't calling tight ends names all day. Nick Bolton was everywhere in that game yesterday. It was his best game of the season. He was fantastic.
He was terrific. He really was. And yeah, he had a rough first 2 weeks, so the criticism, I think, was warranted at the time. But we saw why he has made a name for himself in the league, why he has become a player that, while I think in Kansas City, in a weird way now, suddenly less appreciated by some than he is in other markets. I mean, Chris Collinsworth was praising the heck out of him even before he was having the game that he was having. So I think he's maybe viewed more highly outside the market by fans than in this market for whatever reason. And I think it's the frustration with the coverage stuff. But when it comes to the run game and being a thumper, that I mean, that's his bread and butter. And we saw that last night, that one particular play at the end, sure. But throughout the entire game, that's as good as it gets. I mean, that's the type of performance that you can only dream about getting from a linebacker that plays the role he has. Yes. And I still think we downplay the fact that he is the green dot, that he is orchestrating the entire defense. Whenever he's not out there, it is a much bigger loss than, oh, well, they'll just have Leo Chanel or Jack Cochran, no disrespect to them. We'll just have them out in coverage. There's a lot more to it than just that.
Somebody has to make the call
when Nick Bolton's not on the field. So he deserves the praise he's getting today, hopefully, that he is getting. He certainly got it last night. Because it wasn't a great 2 weeks, but he was sensational last night, and he was also banged up too. He was
him fighting and cramps. What was he fighting? Was holding his back or hip the entire time?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't Jalen Watson and Nick Bolton were hurt on that final drive, but they came back in final two or three plays or whatever when it mattered most, which is, look, I'm not saying they're the first football player that's ever battled through injury, but still that was key to see, and it really impressive stuff from Nick Bolton.
Yeah, it was his, it's why people have gotten to like him in Kansas City. It doesn't erase, maybe some of the deficiencies in his game. There'll be other teams that try to take advantage of that. But the Falcons, obviously, they have Bijan Robinson and they have Tyler Allgeier. And Kirk Cousins has not found his rhythm inside the offense yet. I still think there's time on that. I think he's recovering from an injury and he's in a new offense with new weapons. Yeah, you're not going to want to face the Falcons nearly as much in Week 9. Maybe I'm off on this team. Maybe we're both off on this team. But I'm pretty sure by Week 9, you're not going to really like facing Atlanta when those things are clicking for them. And they do have weapons. And you can see why they would be dangerous. But they try to go to the run game. They had 17 carries for Bijan Robinson. He went for less than 40 yards. Now, we'll talk more about the defense as a whole coming up in a little bit, but that's attributed to Nick Bolton. I'll give him a lot of credit, and I told you on Friday, we talked a little bit about him. It really rang true to me when I was the Chiefs locker room covering Derek Johnson, and he was coming back from that, I think, Achilles, when he was coming back from the final injury, and he had made it very clear to say the last thing to come back is your eyes. You're always a lot slower as a linebacker when you first get back, you're first back from injury. It is hard to be as aggressive as you're used to being. Well, it didn't look like that for Bolton on Friday, did it? Look like he had his eyes back. Yeah. He got faster to the spot than he has all season long.
Yeah, Derek Johnson was on the morning show today, but he was on the show as he is every Monday. Last Monday, that's exactly what he brought up, Cody, what you said there. That when Derek Johnson was talking about, he was asked about Nick Bolton from Dusty and Bob, basically like, hey, what, you know, is he all right? Like, what's going on? One, he said, yeah, he's going to be fine, but he acknowledged that he thinks maybe that's something that has to improve, and this was a huge game for that. And you brought up the tight ends, and it's interesting because for a second, I'm like, oh boy, here we go again. The 150. Yeah. But honestly, it was the 150-yard reception where they really got him, and that was Justin Reed, I think, in coverage there.
It was.
And after that, Kyle Pitts ended up with, what, 59 yards? Catches, 59 yards. So
one more catch for nine
actually,
yards.
For the first time all year, I don't think it's even fair to say, oh, the tight ends got the best of him. No, they one catch for 50 yards. I disagree.
And they originally called a hold on Bijan Robinson and picked up the flag.
They did. They waved it off. That's
and,
right.
In that retrospect. Right. And look, again, this is not, I think in the middle, like, we keep a live update of, like, the things we're watching in the game. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the game when these penalties are getting called long before the final play, I had said, God, some of this officiating is brutal. And I put in there a particular note that said, I'm never going to blame this for the win or the loss, but that was a missed holding call on Bijan Robinson. He definitely helped.
Probably. Yeah, probably. But again, that's the point.
Who cares? Calls get missed.
Going back to what we said before, every single NFL game has a call that is missed or two or three or four. You hope that it's not that many, but that's usually what we see. And it's what team takes advantage of the break that they get. and nobody, as we started the show with, nobody takes advantage of the break that you might get than the Chiefs. So it feels like they get more breaks. It's that, I mean, it's that simple to
23 carries for 63 yards is all they ended up with because of Nick Bolton. So I'll give them all the credit in the world.
We're just getting started here on a Victory Monday. We want to hear from you throughout the show, as always, on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. That's also the phone line as well, 913-586-7965. In 10 minutes, we will talk about the Royals, and it's gone sad. It really has. It's gone sad here, losing 7 in a row. Final 6 games of the season, we're going to talk about if there's any chance they get out of this thing. But as of right now, they still occupy a playoff spot. Meanwhile, one other note in the NFL, it's important because the Chiefs quickly do have to turn the page after a Sunday night game. They're going to be out in L.A. on Sunday to take on the Chargers. And going into the game, we knew that there was a chance Justin Herbert would not play, and it could have been Taylor Heinicke or Easton Stick because of a high ankle sprain, to go with the plantar fasciitis he was already dealing with during training camp. We're like, maybe they're not going to play him. They chose to play him, and unfortunately, he re-aggravated or just continued to have the same issue with a high ankle sprain. And so he's probably going to be questionable for this game at best on Sunday. And that's why the Chiefs are like 8.5-point favorites already for this game.
He left in a boot. So as much as I would give Harbaugh credit, because I do think that the Chargers had like adopted the Harbaugh mentality, man. They were running the ball. They were playing physical defense. They were getting wins because of it. This was old tough guy football nonsense, and it's going to cost them not one, but two football games instead. This was coaching malpractice. They knew going into the game that they were going to let Justin Herbert talk his way onto the field, even though he had a high ankle sprain. This is not the playoffs. This is not Mahomes' high ankle sprain a year ago, 2 years ago. It's not the playoffs. It's not the wild card round. He doesn't have to force it or play through it. And instead he did, and not just did, against the number one defense in the NFL and TJ Watt. I'm sorry, but how the hell did you think that was going to go? You thought he was just going to stay upright and never get hurt against the number one defensive line in the league? It's coaching malpractice. So now Justin Herbert's hurt, and it's a pretty good chance the Chiefs are going to get Taylor Heinicke on Sunday, I think. He left in a boot. You think he's playing Sunday?
Well, I think it's unlikely at this point. It's, you know, as we know, though, it's amazing what they can do during a week when you have training staff and doctors 24/7 basically able to get you right for that game on Sunday. So I don't think you can say he's for sure out, but it seems unlikely as we sit on a Monday based off of how that went down. They didn't rule him out of the game ever. It was weird. Like, he was always listed as questionable during the game. They never actually said he was officially out. They just continue to roll with Taylor Heinicke. But that's a huge blow for obvious reasons. If, in fact, the Chiefs don't have to take on Justin Herbert, it's already a Chargers team that I wasn't sold on to begin with. And now they lost to Pittsburgh, and now maybe they come back down to earth and lose a couple in a row, and everybody can calm down with Harbaugh Coach of the Year stuff.
Yeah, it's just, it's bad.
That,
it's,
by the way, is going to belong to Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota.
You think? The 3-0 Minnesota Vikings
Darnold,
just took
man.
Down.
Sam Darnold, he's going to get himself another job after this season.
Yeah, he is. Because they already drafted J.J. McCarthy. Even they weren't even like full believers in Sam Darnold because they drafted a quarterback.
There was always a chance that Darnold was going to start week one or two or something like that and then transition to McCarthy. But as we know, once McCarthy went down in preseason, it was Sam Darnold's team. And to his credit, he's looked great.
He has.
And they beat up on the Texans. That was not a competitive game. They were throughout. They beat up on C.J. Stroud. He made some mistakes early on. We'll talk more rest of the AFC throughout the week.
Yeah, it probably will be O'Connell. But I had said, and this was not hindsight. Going into the game, you can beat Pittsburgh with Taylor Heinicke. Because Pittsburgh's only going to put like 17 on you, 20 on you. They're not world beaters offensively. They're not going to bury you. You can play some gross, grinded-out football game and actually beat Pittsburgh if you're the Chargers. But knowing that the team who has won the division for nine straight, is it nine straight, eight straight?
Whatever. Eight, I think we're up to eight.
Straight,
I know, it's hard to keep track. I understand.
There's just so many numbers for the Chiefs. I just get confused on them. How many straight AFC title games
actually,
in it? How many Super Bowls in it?
Let's do this.
Let's erase this and we'll put it over there.
We have a whiteboard in the corner of the room. It still has our weight loss challenge competition
from
2 or 3 years ago. I think we clean the whiteboard and we write any notable, you know, basically any accolade and notable streak that is currently alive for the Chiefs. Let's just put it up there for reference for everybody and simplify. Really confusing, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of them. How many Super Bowls in how many years?
Really
how many
tough.
Straight AFC title games? How many straight AFC West titles? But the point is, for as many consecutive AFC West titles as they have won, and you've got them in your building in the early part of the season where you're having success, why would you risk it? Why would you risk Justin Herbert in that moment? Again, if it's the Panthers, Maybe don't risk it at all. But against that defensive line, no. Don't send your man out for the slaughter. And I wouldn't want the Chiefs doing that either. If it were a divisional game the following week and they were taking on the identical team. They take on the Steelers, right? They take on the Steelers on Christmas Day.
They do.
Let's say the following week. I don't remember who they have, but let's I don't remember their
that'd be in the middle of a 10-game stretch or three games in 11-day stretch.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the game before, right? It's like the game after they got the Chargers again. Don't play them on Christmas Day. Carson Wentz, welcome to the game, man. If he has an ankle sprain, why would you risk it? Like, I understand, and you have nothing on the line in week three. You're not fighting for the division yet. You're not fighting for the playoffs. You're not fighting for seeding. Nothing. It's week three. Risk it for 1 week and keep your guy healthy. I was surprised.
Coming up next, though, we do talk a little Royals baseball. It is the final week of the season. They have lost 7 in a row. We're going to talk this one out together next. I was going through our system during the break. I'm like, oh, maybe we'll have a highlight coming back. Of the Royals.
Oh! Mm-hmm. I was like, there's plenty of Chiefs highlights in there.
And I'll be honest.
Maybe the Connor pick?
The Royals, we know they've lost 7 in a row. The highlights I can choose from are either sack flies or just random defensive gems. And that's another sign of what is, in case the 7-game losing streak wasn't obvious enough, mm-hmm. of where this team is at. This is it, man. 6 games to go.
Actively in a playoff spot. Would you like to say something nice first?
Yes.
If the playoffs were to start today, would the Royals be in the playoffs?
They would. They would. I wish the season ended today, because that's how nervous I am about this.
You should be.
How can you not? Look, 2 weeks ago, someone asked us, hey, like, do you guys really think they're making the playoffs? And I was like, definitively, yes. Admittedly, I did not think a 7-game losing streak was on the horizon with games at home during said 7-game losing streak. I did not think with the Giants coming to town that that would also be part of the losing streak, or that the Tigers would sweep the Royals. No, I did not think that was going to happen. And yet here we are, and it's gotten to the point where it's one thing, like, there's anger for sure, I think, from a lot of people, but it's like sad. Like, it's really sad because we know what this season overall has been, right? It's been an unbelievable ride for this team. Bobby Wood Jr.'s in the MVP conversation. Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo are all-star game pitchers. One of them should have been the starter. All of that makes this even sadder, because they're having some historical things happen, a lot of it positive, and unfortunately, they are trending for a historical collapse.
The reason why I didn't think they'd ever miss the playoffs is for the same stats I gave you. It's like, well, they're going to have to go 7-2, and the Royals go 2-7. Well, all that's happened. Now, those numbers don't matter anymore. I was dead wrong on that because, again, and I don't think even the most pessimistic fan I was talking to at that time thought 7 more losses in a row were coming after the previous 7-game losing streak. So, yeah, if the playoffs started today, they'd be in the postseason. And they do hold some tiebreakers in this scenario that if they finish with the same record, they'll be there. And thank God the Minnesota Twins are playing equally awful baseball as them. Not the Tigers. Tigers are playing great. But equally awful baseball as the Royals, currently as it sits, is the Minnesota Twins. But you better get a win tomorrow. We can't keep doing this. I asked yesterday on social media, right after they lost again, and I honestly was trying to think about it. So I was like, okay, what is a sacrifice this show can make? What is something we can do in order to help the Royals win? And people go with the obvious, right? We get Joe Boo his rum. We bring in a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. We burn some sage. We hold a seance. I don't care, right? Talk to the dead. Whatever we need to do in order to get this team back on the winning ways. And I thought about all these things. We could bring it on a Monday, bring it on a Tuesday, try to snap out of it. And then I decided it was my own personal thing to try to give up something. It's like Lent. I got to give up something for the Royals to snap out of this. And while what I've seen, and I appreciate the support, the Royals were 6-6 under my songs. They were 1-6 in the week before. They were 0-6 now in the, or 0-3 in the 3 games following the song. So I was 500. Was it the best song? I was 500. Better than what they've been.
You guaranteed they were going to make it. The whole song was about them making it.
I know, but what I have to make a personal sacrifice, I think, in order to do this. So while I think my normal attitude,
you're going
to
pay off your bet finally.
My normal attitude would be is that I would try to make a song to once again resurrect this team. But instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a sacrifice, and I'm going to promise you no song, and that the Royals themselves will get this win. I will bypass making a song, even though I want to. Very tempted. I appreciate the support of the people who say that they're going to do it. I'm going to... They're still going to make it hold. And it's going to hold. And this team is going to make the postseason, even though I'm terrified right now of what's been taking place over the last week of baseball. Because it's been bleak. Really bleak. Honestly, they just can't hit. You want to know the truth? They just can't hit.
Yeah.
Pitching's not been the problem. They just can't hit. Can't buy a hit. Salvador Perez comes up with the bases loaded yesterday in a 2-0 game where they pitched their hearts out. And you're like, please, Salvi, just one down the line for old time's sake. Just one over the fence for me today. Nothing.
They got nothing right now, man. They got nothing at the plate whatsoever. What's weird is like the starting pitching actually hadn't been bad, but it doesn't matter. Like, remember the time when we're like, man, just, you know, you got to get really good starting pitching tonight to make sure to support that offense, you know, starting pitching, carrying this team. What we have found out that as great as the starting pitching has been, when your offense literally has nothing going for it, doesn't matter. You could have Seth Lugo with Greg Maddux, with Pedro Martinez out there right now. It doesn't matter.
Back to back to back.
It doesn't matter right now. That's not the issue. They have nothing offensively whatsoever. They are one of the worst offensive teams post the injury of Vinny Pasquantino. And clearly, they would not be on a 7-game losing streak if Vinny was in the lineup, his 100 RBI, etc. However, yeah. I still don't know how one loss has destroyed the entire lineup. Just destroyed it. There was a weak stretch where Tommy Pham, that was fun for a little while.
Yeah.
Leading off, right? That was really fun. I mean, it got to the point where they're trying anything. Adam Frazier was leading off the other day because, you know what? Why not? Why not? And try, at this point, try anything. That's where we're at, and it comes at the worst possible time. As we said last week, they had their first home sweep of the season. They got swept for the first time at home all year in that Tigers series. And, of course, then it continued with another sweep, getting swept by the San Francisco Giants. Like, all of this, it could not happen at a worse time. Teams have struggles, but to have 2 7-game losing streaks in a month span, basically, is devastating. The fact that they're still in the playoffs as of right this second is amazing, honestly.
Spoke to the start to the season that they still had, honestly. The lead that they had built up, the cushion that they had given themselves, and thank God they did. Because, I mean, it's not surprising to me they're struggling offensively, because Bobby's in a bit of a lull. I'm not worried about Bobby, he's just in a bit of a lull. Salvi's in a bit of a lull. And when you get those two guys, look at what they're rolling out every day. Every day, Adam Frazier's in the lineup. Every day, Yuli Gurriel is in the lineup.
And he's been one of their better hitters.
He was on the street. Every day, Tommy Pham, who was on the street, is in the order. They've got 4 guys actively in their lineup, like Grossman, who were plucked off of the damn street and are making starts every day in their lineup. And the reason why is because none of the young hitters have forced them to start them every day. That's the bigger problem for me. It's that Mikel and MJ and those guys haven't forced your hand. That you can't keep starting Yuli Gurriel. You got to play these young guys and you got to force them into this action. And you got to make the decision for them. And because of that, they're so thin lineup wise. I mean, they just can't score.
And that's where it's like, I disagree for like everybody bears responsibility for how this team is playing. Everybody, front office, manager, the players, most importantly, everybody bears responsibility for what is looking like an epic collapse, unfortunately, unless they figure something out. Not soon, as in now. As in tomorrow, and it might already be too late. We'll see if they can recover with 6 games to go. But to your point about the line, this is where like I don't put a huge, huge chunk of it though on Q, because you just laid it out there. Like, what do you want the lineup to look like? What do you want at this point them to do from the players have to go out and play, man.
Someone has
to
hit.
And you're right that you would love to be able to have Mikel and MJ and these guys in the lineup, but we're long past the, well, just give them another chance period of time. Like, they have had MJ Melendez and Mikel Garcia, whether it was this year or last year, have had plenty of opportunities to go out there and basically earn it, or go out there and show you and evaluate all that. We did that all last year and earlier on this season. We've already done that. So it is now like anything you can have, maybe the veterans can handle the pressure more kind of thing. I don't know. But there's no bad ideas anymore. I don't care. There are no bad ideas when you have 6 to go, when you've lost 7 in a row, and when you are a loss away from being not eliminated, but out of a playoff spot with, at that point, 5 to go. So you get the Nationals, a pesky Nationals team who Fortunately for the Royals, just sent down one of their best players because he was on a heater at the roulette table till 8 a.m. the night before a game, and so they sent him down to the minors.
That's an incredible
story. We
got to
get to that story.
Story
later. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I got a couple thoughts on that. C.J. Abrams I'm talking about. So they actually get a break that one of their better players will not be playing the Royals. Maybe that's what we need.
I need anything.
Anything is on the table. I
need him to not
table.
Show up. I need him to forfeit tonight or tomorrow night. Just whatever it takes in order to get there. And
someone
it's just
says,
like,
why are we holding to a high standard? They lost 100 games. Okay, so they won 56 games last year.
Because it's September and I watched
them play. For 2.5, 3 months, they've been in a playoff position, and now they're losing 7 in a row, and they've lost combined 2 losing streaks of 14 in a row in a month. That's why. There still has to be some sort of expectation when you're there, right? Otherwise, weeks and weeks and weeks from now, yeah, you can step back and say, man, that was a huge sign of improvement for the organization. That's all true. I said that last week. But right now, to just act like it's not a big deal because they've lost 7 in a row and might be in jeopardy missing the playoffs, how can you say that's not a big deal? They are truly on the verge of one of the worst collapses to miss the playoffs after where they're at. And we've seen a long time in baseball.
Certainly their franchise's history, but yeah. One of the worst ones. They had one of the single greatest turnarounds in baseball history, and now they're following it up by possibly from a win-loss perspective and then possibly missing. At least they're still in the playoff spot today. I'll take the small
What's
victory.
What's the percentage on the so-called 68. Projection sites?
Baseball Reference puts them at 68.4%. They were 90% a week ago. So they've dropped over 20% in a week. They still favor them over Minnesota. They still they favor Detroit now.
Well, the Tigers are making the playoffs. I said it last Friday, or Thursday.
But they put them at 72%.
The Tigers are going to make the playoffs. It really is whether or not the Royals hold off the Twins. Who's going to suck more or less, however you want to phrase it, over the next 6 games? Is it the Royals or is it going to be the Twins? The team that sucks less over the next 6 is going to somehow make the playoffs.
You said no bad ideas over on YouTube. Somebody said, what's Zach Greinke up to? Not for pitching. I just want to see if maybe he can hit this upcoming weekend. Very good hitting pitcher, you know?
Yeah.
Wants to get that one more stolen base. Anything's possible. Back to the Chiefs for at least a little bit.
Yeah,
can we
get more positive?
Yeah. And not just Chiefs. Let's talk positive Chiefs. Not only are they 3-0, we all underestimated what Rashee Rice was turning into right before our very eyes. I thought I was being optimistic when I told you the week before the season, I thought Rashee Rice was a 1,200-yard wide receiver going into the year. But after last night, another massive performance in which they had no answer for him. He leads the league in yards after catch. He leads in forced missed tackles. He is, by all account, the Chiefs' number one receiving threat in which 100%. Nobody can guard. Rashee Rice is getting better. That should scare the rest of the league. We talked about life after Travis Kelce. We can get to him in a minute, but I mean, if this is what Rashee Rice is going to turn into, well, I'm not going to fear that all that much, am I?
No, we've seen the improvement. We absolutely have seen the improvement. I also think what's happening with this is specifically the Falcons, who play more zone than most teams in the NFL. If you're going to give any bit of cushion to Rashee Rice, like he's going to feast on you, and Travis Kelce used to do that. And I think what we're seeing a little bit, we'll talk about Kelce more next hour, but we're starting to see a lot of those, you know, settling down kind of in the zone and finding the open space. Rashee Rice has credited Travis Kelce, learning from him on that. I think he's started to learn from the master a little bit on how to do that, settle into space. They also had, 5 design wide receiver screens at least to Rashee Rice, where Juju was out there blocking. I think that was an underrated trait of when they brought back Juju. We didn't really acknowledge. I get it. He's a receiver, so we think stats, and he did have a touchdown yesterday. But Juju is one of the better blocking wide receivers in the league, and that's why the wide receiver screen was working last night, setting it up for Rashee Rice. And got to be really impressed with the development for Rice, and I think he is getting a lot of the same opportunities that we once said Travis Kelce was getting. And that is for a variety of reasons happening. The question with Rice, I always worry about a player that suddenly is getting career highs and targets and receptions. The only concern is, of course, durability. And last night, I'm assuming he just got the wind knocked out of him. That was for a brief second, it was a scare, but he walked off and it looked like maybe he just got the wind knocked out of him. But that's the only concern I would have with him is like he's taken way more hits than he's ever had at the NFL level. So they got, right now he's their best option. Got to feed him, keep on feeding him. It's a long season.
But I don't want to see
it's a long season. They got to get at some point later on Travis going again or something.
Like his new peak now is at the end of the season. You could make an argument that he's like right now, if you just wanted to, it's early in a season. So people typically wouldn't start these conversations up. You could make an argument right now. He's a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL. There's only a handful of guys you would definitively take over them. And that's because they have like three or four years of a proven track record. Everyone else, I can make whatever argument I want. He's second in the NFL in catches. He's second in the NFL in total yards. He's got two touchdowns through three games. I told you he's on pace for 130 yards and 1,600 yards, or 103 catches, mm-hmm. and 1,600 yards. I don't think he'll finish that high because he's obviously coming off that massive game last night, but he has taken, I told you I thought he was going to take a leap. He's been even better than I thought, because what's changed is his ability to understand and know the offense has made him so much more immediately dynamic this season than last year. That, and because I do think the attention Travis Kelce takes, they're still letting him kind of work on his own. And when you work on your own, you can be open a lot.
And I think Mahomes trusts him. You know, last year he's still a rookie. You don't know much, you know, you don't know about that relationship and trusting. And now you're into your second year in the league. And whether it's the offseason, Pat camp, whatever it may be, that I think that factors in. There's a lot of different things that go into it. The Travis part is just so interesting because that was a huge storyline during the game last night on the broadcast. And there was a concerted effort right in the second half at the beginning to give him the ball. But at some point, what are teams going to choose? They're going to keep sticking two guys on Travis?
They're going to choose Rice.
When is that adjust? What team is going to say, all right, that's enough
now?
You know, maybe the primetime game helps. They all watch film, but maybe that's the stage that he needed again to just go off against the Falcons. At some point, are the Chargers this week, or maybe it's the Saints in a couple weeks? Who's going to say, all right, that's enough? We're going to make life much more challenging for Rice. He still might get us, because to your point, he just might be one of those guys now in the league. But he's still going to get us. But no, we're going to either make Kelce prove that he can still do it, or we're going to make Worthy or Juju or somebody else. Because at some point, teams are not going to, especially if you're playing zone like the Falcons. I mean, it's too easy for Rice.
With the biggest problem with that is, imagine, this is why I actually don't think it'll be this week. I actually think it'll be like 4 weeks from now. Because imagine sitting in a defensive meeting room, having faced the Chiefs for the last decade straight, and trying to convince your defensive coaching staff, be like, hey, guys, let's just see what would happen if Travis Kelce beat us this week. You'd be like, excuse me? Hey, idiot, what did you just say? Did you just say, let's see if they can beat us using Travis Kelce? That's how they've been beating us
This is the beautiful thing. If you're the Chiefs, though, that you're developing. Yeah. Mahomes spoke on this a little bit in postgame last night down in Atlanta, is that, as the season, we're still only 3 weeks into this dang thing. And later on in the year, whether it's a week from now or 2 months from now, you're going to cause more problems for the opponent. If Rice doing this now, Worthy even in week one doing what he did, like that, those are all things that are making it more challenging for your opponent as the season goes on. At some point, somebody else is going to have a bigger game. Hell, Carson Steele for his rookie debut.
Yeah, nice game.
He held his own, right? He held his own. Effective.
Running. And it was a split through the half, and then they just went, it was 50-50. All Carson Steele.
Well, when you don't have an established back, you go with the hot hand every single time, and that was Carson Steele yesterday.
No, it was Rashee Rice is going to make everything on the offense easier, because the guy we're not talking about that also gets to be the beneficiary is Xavier Worthy. There's a reason why he's standing in the end zone, kind of open deep. Mahomes underthrew the ball a little bit, but it's like that had a chance to be a deep touchdown. Mahomes leads him a little bit more. Worthy comes back to get the whatever. Right? There's a million ways where that ends up as a touchdown, and he's open downfield by himself with one other guy guarding him, because you got to focus on Rice and Kelce, because they're still going to choose Worthy last. Even with his speed, they're going to choose him last. It's going to make it easier for Steele, easier for Worthy. Hell, it makes it easier for guys like Justin Watson, who just standing by himself there on that one third down. He makes one catch a game when
I
you just
think
need
it. Mahomes basically pump faked them open. I mean, that play, Mahomes, three pump fakes. And eventually Justin Watson, going back to the relationship that exists when you have someone on the team for multiple years, like he knows what he's supposed, like some of the, you know,
you can watch
example,
the defenders follow the pump fakes. It's not even that like hard to diagnose when you're like, you just watch them go.
But I think that play compared to late in the game when Worthy stops running is the example of, hey, when you're in this offense more and you understand what Mahomes is looking for helps, because Worthy at the end of the game pretty clearly should have kept running. He stops on the route, and that's why I was like, what the hell happened there? It's incomplete. Whereas Justin Watson, different route, I understand. But the point is that's a play that Worthy is not going to make that mistake again now. My guess is Worthy is going to make sure he now knows if he didn't before.
I want you to keep running.
Though. Yeah.
Which is small, but also makes a big difference.
It could have cost him the game, though. Punt right after that.
We'll take some of your calls in the next segment at 11 o'clock. So if you want to get on the phone line now, 913-586-7965. We'd love to take your calls on what you think about the Chiefs' 3-0 start here on a Victory Monday. As the Chiefs once again starting 3-0, 9 wins in a row, feeling good about it again. One player, we talked about Rashee Rice's development. How about Shamari Connors? That was a another kind of standout game for him. We said the best game he had all last year was in the Super Bowl. He looked pretty damn good yesterday, not just because he got the pick because of the Turk Wharton pressure, by the way, another player we could almost do a standalone topic on. Turk Wharton, who made the pressure. But Connor gets the pick. He's making tackles. They're using him against tight ends. Like, Jamari Connor is a real weapon. What I like about him is they always seem to find yet another versatile guy. Sometimes use him in coverage. Sometimes use him in blitz game. Sometimes use him in the run game. Connor's just kind of a little bit of everywhere all over the field. That's what makes him work so well.
Yeah, he was impressive again. That's two games in a row in particular where you've seen the athleticism really stand out. I think they just love the versatility. He literally, whatever Spags needs him to do, he can do it. You know, and we know, look at the course of time since Spags has been here. There's always been one player every year that they will line up just about everywhere in the secondary. And when it comes to disguising blitzes, when it actually blitzing, whatever it may be, where Spags is able to have kind of one do everything type of guy. It was Legarius Sneed for a couple years until he developed into just an ultimate shutdown corner. But for a while, that was Sneed. McDuffie was for a little bit was that kind of guy. Now I think we're finding out that Shamari Connor is going to be that player in this defense for Spags.
Yeah, I think
line him up everywhere. Basically, you don't know where the hell he's coming from. Last week he's gonna, you know, last week against Cincinnati, he's gonna be shot out of a cannon and blitz your ass. This week they're gonna drop him back a little bit. He was in the right spot, right time.
Sure.
Turk Wharton, as you pointed out, led to that interception, and then he just had the wherewithal also to flip it to was that Jalen Watson? He flipped it to
nobody flips the ball more than the Chiefs. They love a good lateral, don't they?
That's fun, you know.
They got an extra 15 yards out of it, I think. Maybe
I don't know if it was 15 or whatever, but it helped them because they hopefully get that. There was 32 seconds left after that interception in the lateral, and they end up kicking a field goal, if I'm not mistaken, right before half. So it helped them get a little bit closer for Butker, who. As long as it's not an extra point, man, he's automatic. It's unreal.
Yeah, 19 missed extra points. So what a weird storyline that is for his NFL career. But with Connor, I'd love it. So I think he's a really good player. I think he's a great fit. Jaden Hicks looks good when he comes into all that stuff, right? But there is a point in me that's like, I don't think all of these guys are exceptional blitzers. I just think Spags is better.
Yeah, he's the
at
best.
Designing
he's
blitzes
the best in the game, man.
Than anyone else in the league. Because it'll be like, oh no, Sneed's leaving. He's our blitz guy. Or Tyrann Mathieu's leaving. He's our blitz guy. And Tyrann Mathieu's had a nice resurgence over there in
New
Orleans.
He's got three picks or something this year.
Tyrann Mathieu leaves. He's their blitz guy. Doesn't matter. Now it's Legarius Sneed. Legarius Sneed leaves. No, what are we? It's just somebody else. They're better at getting that, like, that secondary pass rush where not only do they send one blitzer and you pick it up, it's the blitzer behind that blitzer that seemingly gets these teams all the time. They fool him every single time.
He's the best at just disguising blitzes. Like late in the game, everybody knew they were going, it was cover zero. They were bringing the house. The Falcons knew that was coming and it still didn't matter. But there are other times in the game where in particular, Felix Anidike Uzomah. Right, that strip sack that he gets, he ran free, completely free, nobody in his way, and you know why that happened? Because of what the way they schemed it with Nick Bolton. Yeah. Like, so FAU, props to him, he made the play, right? He deserves credit for that.
Yeah,
but I mean,
great sack force fumble, first full sack,
untouched, man, completely untouched.
You are 9 more sacks away from having to shave your head. Is that what it was? I don't even remember now.
Yes.
10 sacks, isn't that what you said?
Yeah, 10 sacks for Felix.
So. One sack closer.
I feel like you should join me on that too, since you've been. I've actually been way more patient. I'll use as a word than Felix.
But I've never written him off or said to write him off. I just
you didn't like the pick from day one.
Yeah, so that makes me less optimistic as time goes on. But I know he went unblocked, so I could be the knock. I'd be like, wow, congrats. You got a sack when nobody blocked you? That's not necessary.
And don't say you could do it because we saw your Derby performance. You can't even win a hot dog derby race.
I definitely wasn't going to say.
We'll get to that during Trash of the Day today.
Trash of the Day?
Yeah, it's going to be Trash of the
Day.
You're
just making it Trash of the Day?
I'm making your derby race where you're now 0-4 Trash of the Day.
We'll talk about that then.
Uh-huh.
I guess a tease for that. But I wasn't going to say I could do it. But I'm not going to knock him. Your job on that, his job on that is to go untouched to the quarterback and get to him. What did he do? He got to the quarterback, he forced a fumble. Like, he did everything he was supposed to do on that play. I'm not going to knock guys because it got easier sometimes. Sometimes it's supposed to be easy. I get more frustrated with the players that when it's supposed to be easy, they screw it up, right? Because plenty of players do that. Ball's right in your hand, and there's nothing but room to run, and then you can't make the play. Felix, on a play where he was unblocked, forced a fumble and sacked Kirk Cousins. He did great.
All right, coming up next, we get to the 11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Goal. I want to talk more about what this defense has done. One area that they were really bad at a year ago, and three games in, it looks really promising. And we also learned a lot from the rest of the NFL, and it's great news for the Chiefs. That's next on Cody and Gold.